Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Danny Gatton and Funky Mama, and that's from the album 88 Elmira Street, released on the 19th of March in 1991 on Elektra Records.
Now, this show is all about Danny Gatton.
Danny Gatton.
The most unknown guitar player, apart from Roy Buchanan, is that right? Mm-hmm. Is that what they said?
Very similar, yeah. The same nickname, apparently.
Yeah. And, you know, he's unbelievable. We've played, I think we played this track a few shows ago, what, about 10 or 15 shows ago. It's on 92 now, we're on show 92.
It's cool, isn't it?
Incredible, yeah. And known as the Humbler.
Yes.
And it's hardly surprising, because the first time I heard him, he just literally blew my socks off. I just didn't know what to do, because he's just all over the place. He's so good.
And I mean, what's he doing? He's like speaking.
Yeah, he's, well, he's got this very, historically, he plays a Telecaster. We're going to talk about later on about that. But he's got that Telecaster sound, compressor through a Fender amp, clean, and everything you hear is him. He's pulling harmonics, he's chicken picking, he's all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable. And that is a super groovy tune, isn't it?
It is. Well, I didn't. So Danny was an American guitarist who's renowned for fusing blues and rockabilly, jazz and country to create this kind of musical style that he kind of called redneck jazz. But that he's just far much more than that.
Mm.
I mean, I don't really know. You know about Danny Gatton. What I love about doing this show with you is that all the people that don't know about Danny get to learn with me, and we can all piece things together.
Well, it was a guy called Amos Garrett who called him the Humbler.
Yeah.
For his ability to defeat other guitarists in inverted commas, head-cutting jam sessions.
Indeed.
You know, I mean, and there's every guitar player that is big out there, everyone thinks Danny Gatton is probably one of the greatest guitar players ever. I mean, Eric Clapton, everybody, you know.
Albert Lee,
you know, Les Paul.
Vince Gill, everybody.
Yeah,
Vince Gill, anybody.
Yeah, because it's totally remarkable. And this album was nominated for the Best Rock Instrumental Performance in 1992 Grammys, is that right?
I know, it's crazy, really, because it's Danny's fifth album, but it was first on a major record label, and that was Elektra. And it got to number 121 in the Billboard 200 charts, and yeah, he got nominated for a Grammy for it, which is huge, you know.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's hardly surprising, though. And it was recorded at Bearsville Studios. It was owned by Albert Grossman, the manager of Bob Dylan, the band, Janis Joplin and Todd Rundgren. It's a couple of hours out of New York.
Woodstock.
And, yeah, in Woodstock. So it was a very cool place to, you know, to sort of record. But Danny Gatton, you know, he's got a very interesting history, because he started playing...
Well, I'm going to tell you,
okay.
Let's start from the very beginning.
Yes, beginning.
It's the story time. So, Daniel Wood Gatton Jr. was born on the 4th of September in 1945 in Washington, D.C. Mm. And he was born into a musical family. His father played in a dance band, and his mother, Norma, was a...
Great.
I love that name. Norma was a country music fan. So Danny got his first guitar at age 9 when his family moved to the suburb of Anacostia. And he had guitar lessons, but he only lasted 6 months, because once he'd mastered the country standard Wildwood Flower, he decided he could figure out anything he wanted to. And his first performance was in 1956 at the Cottage City Firehouse in Bladensburg, Maryland. Age 11. How cool is that? So, but perhaps his greatest influence was the music of Les Paul. His uncle introduced him to Les Paul. And I think it was a lot to do more as well, equally with the technological innovations as well as Les Paul's music. And what he used to do, which reminds me of you, he used to slow down Les Paul's 45 RPM records to 33 to get a better understanding of how the different parts were layered. And he even tried to emulate Les Paul by rigging up two tape deck machines to perform primitive overdubs. So he said he would play a track on the left machine, run it into the right one with a Y chord and play along with it. And then he created an echo by doubling a part and playing a bit behind himself, which is age 12. Because you used to do that with Led Zeppelin.
That's right, yeah.
When you first started playing, didn't you?
All those, yeah, I used to do it on a tape machine. I used to record it at 7.5 inches per second and then play it back at 3 3/4, yeah. So it was at half speed and therefore it was an octave down, but you could still work it out.
So, and also, so carrying on, Danny started playing with a local group, the Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
Yeah, the great name. And that's when he credited a guy called Gene Newport for teaching me how to play by ear. And it's really important that, you know. And he moved on to team band The Lancers in 1957, playing his Gibson ES-350. And that's when he was developing some really amazing chops. And in 1959, he was age 14, he auditioned for an established and somewhat older band called The Offbeats. And he got his first gig and made his first recording with them called Beggar Man, Trouble in Mind a year later. How cool is that? Age 14, 15.
Mystery Train.
Danny and the Fat Boys. Mystery Train from their first and only album, American Music, released on October 1975 on Aladdin Records. And it was formed in late 1974 with vocalist Billy Hancock, pianist Dick Heinz, drummer Robbie Mag Gruder, bass player Steve Wolf, and tenor saxophonist Ralph McDuffie. Now, that's got James Burton all over it. Now, James Burton used to play with Elvis, right?
Right.
And it's like a cross between James Burton and Scotty Moore and all that stuff, of course. And there's some fierce playing. I mean, it's not just fierce, it's ridiculous speed. And just beautiful construction of his, you know, in that. And You know, because it does, he's got that sort of Roy Buchanan sound. It's very edgy, sort of very metallic hard, you know, and he's got a great slapback echo on that, which is fantastic. I just love this guy. It's unbelievable. It's playing absolutely unbelievable. Anyway.
And do you know what's really moved me about studying, researching for the show is that, you know, before I met you, I didn't really like electric guitar players anyway, because they didn't really, only just because I found that they weren't really speaking with the instrument. Mm. They weren't saying anything with the music. It's okay to be technically proficient, but you've got to say something. But the more and more I listen to Danny Gatton, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this man really talked, you know. And he still talks because he's in the music. He's
well,
alive.
That's right. Yeah, it's like when you listen to Robert Fripp, he does it in a completely different way. But it speaks because he's got something to say, you know, with his instrument. And Danny Gatton's got something to say.
So what was quite interesting to discover with Danny, though, that he's kind of a homeboy, you know. He was very reticent to sort of leave Washington. And the furthest he'd ventured with the Offbeats was like he'd played some gigs in New York and the East Coast cities. And keyboardist Dick Hines, who'd been in Roy Buchanan's pre-fame outfit, the Snake Stretchers, became something of a musical father figure to young Danny Gatton. And when the band split and Gatton travelled to the country music mecca of Nashville, baby, in 1967, he was thinking about making a name for himself as a session musician. Mm. But some notes saying that he got homesick and 6 months later he was back. But also, you know, it's a closed shop there and you've got to have the right contacts. And I think there's a bit of both.
Wow. I bet they were terrified of him, actually.
Well, exactly. Can you imagine?
Because him rocking into town, I mean, because, you know, Nashville is full of great guitar players, but, you know, the humble rocks up, you know, and then, wow.
So, funny enough, you know, I mean, this is real life. It's like, you know, a lot of actors have other jobs as well, but with Danny, he had a spell mixing sheet metal work with country gigs as a hired hand, yeah. And he also played with a band called Liz Meyer, or Meyer, and Friends. And that's when he formed the Fat Boys. This album, by the way, is a much sought-after collector's item, but it didn't really sell. So what happened was that after it was released, they disbanded. He didn't really feel that it was going to go anywhere. And that's when he launched his solo career. But what's quite interesting is that as I'm trying to just grow with Danny and go along this journey with him, there's something called the Redneck Jazz Explosion. Mm. And it was a band of hot musicians who played country. And the live tapes, they circulate. They were like gold dust, you know. It was like this hot mix, live bootleg tapes of them playing. Everybody wanted a copy, and Danny gave up his telly for a rare 1961 Gibson Les Paul custom, apparently, and he added a bridge plate and mounted a switching unit he designed with his dad, and he called it the Magic Dingus Box. I thought you'd love this, you know. And so it controlled several effects units, including a Leslie speaker cabinet.
Well, you know something, that must have been a very dangerous box indeed, because Leslie's, generally speaking, they work off main. We've got one. It's all main switching. And the call, any interface that you have for a guitar is normally called the box of death.
Yeah.
Right? Because it can actually put mains voltage straight. Yeah, I know. Straight onto your guitar, you know. So they are pretty tricky things. And to have this box, you know. But the thing is with Danny, though, is that there's a sadness all the way through his career, because he said that making a living from music had always been an unattainable dream, because the record companies used to tell him, we like what you do, but we don't know how to sell it. And I can see that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, it's a very fierce style he's got, and it's almost as though he should have been with a vocalist. He should have been like a Jimmy Page type character, where he had, you know, a musical partner or whatever, you know, together. And I don't know about it. In 1978, he confided that if he had his time again, he'd never actually play an instrument. More often than not, it's been miserable, he said. I mean, I'm 33, my wife's 36, and we have nothing. I can't even buy a house because we can't afford it. I mean, it's such a terrible thing. Now, bearing in mind, this is like the heyday of what we call the heyday of music.
Yeah.
You know? And we talk about now making a living out of music is very, very difficult. But Danny Gatton, I mean, it's just unbelievable. We'll be right back.
fantastic, Danny Gatton, and Elmira Street Boogie. And that's from his Grammy Award-nominated instrumental album, 88 Elmira Street, released on the 19th of March in 91 on Elektra Records.
So when he signed to Elektra, apparently, their only stipulation for his first album was it had to be solely instrumental,
yeah.
Which sort of goes against what I sort of said before, what he should have done. Anyway, and they suggested he record his version of the Simpsons theme tune, but it never happened.
No.
Well, that's probably a good
thing. I don't think he was very impressed.
Well, that, again, is remarkable. And what I love about that is that he tips his hat to Scotty Moore in that. You can hear some Scotty Moore licks in there from the Elvis days. You can also hear a bit of Smokestack lying. Great. And he's so talented because he's just all over the place. And he just does. And I love that right at the very end, though, where he strokes the strings behind the bridge. Because I think in here he was using, because he bought, although he didn't know it at the time, Scotty Moore's old guitar, didn't
That's
he?
That's right, yeah.
You know, which is absolutely incredible. And ES-295, and you could hear it. I think it was that on that, actually, because you can hear he's got a wang bar. And he's obviously, you know, Telecaster doesn't have that's a tremolo arm, where you can bend the notes up and down, the whole chords and stuff. And but on this album, he used a whole pile of guitars, didn't
he? I know.
I
made a list because I thought you'd love all that.
That's great, yeah. He uses his own signature Telecaster with Joe Barden pickups. Although, I've got to say, I've seen some pictures and they look suspiciously like Bill Lawrence pickups to me, like the double rail things. And the Fender's done a reissue recently, or a custom guitar of Danny Gatton, like a tribute thing. And that's got Bill Lawrence on, I'm pretty sure about. And Martin D28, 54, the 295, which is Scotty Moore's old guitar. Six string lap steel Fender, precision bass 58, and he used it virtually exclusively Fender amps, Vibralux, Super Reverbs, Twins, and Deluxes. And you can sort of hear it and all that because, and again, he's using a slapback on that all the time. And I also think that's probably an Echoplex like we use.
Yeah,
it's got Echoplex smells. It drips of authenticity. That whole track.
You know, you're right. And just to go back to that point you made about, you know, well, that goes against the instrumental stipulation. Danny was saying later on as well, and also there's a big opinion that, you know, you've got to remember at the time, record companies just wanted to pigeonhole a musician and niche market you, and that was it. And because he was bigger than just the one, and he got bored so easily, and he just wasn't interested in just doing one. He was doing jazz at the same time as rockabilly, you know? I mean, different albums. It's just like that's who he was. And I think really it was the industry's failure to actually... To capture, you know, to nowadays, I think it's much easier for an artist like an actress to be a singer and to cross genres, you know, in a sense, or cross mediums of creativity and do artistic installations or become a sculptor. You know, you could, as an artist, it's so much more wide-ranging, and it's a shame that the industry let Danny Gatton down in terms of not being able to market him it effectively, really.
Well, in a lot of ways, I mean, you think about the parallels with Jeff Beck of instrumental music and all that,
Jeff did
remarkably well with just basically instrumental music.
Yeah.
And it was round about the same time. He didn't start quite as early. Danny didn't start quite as early as Jeff Beck, of course. But the other parallel is the fact he loves cars as much as he loved music, and he was always chinking around and fascinated.
Exactly, it reminded me of Jeff Beck.
Yeah, very much like that, you know. I've just found about that. I noticed something that you put in about his ES-350 that he bought for him by his father for $375, and it was and that ended up being Scotty Moore's. Is that right? Or is it a different guitar? I don't know. Anyway, it's remarkable, you know. And he hated knobs. That's why he liked Telecaster, because he said, you know, it's just got volume and tone control, which is a great thing. You can play behind the note like, you know, Jimmy Page did quite a bit, you know, pulling all those harmonics, woo, all that sort of stuff going on. He said, Les Paul, too many knobs, Strat, middle pickup always gets in the way, which I agree with.
I know what you're referring to now. And what it was is when the guitar that his dad bought him, he basically hot-rodded it, and adapted them, and his dad wasn't impressed, really. So that's where that came from, really. Because he was actually fiddling and just messing around with things, you know.
What I didn't know is that he was actually left-handed, and I didn't know this at all. And everybody, you know, said that because of this, explained why he was so dexterous around the fingerboard. I'm not quite sure. Because he played a right-hand guitar, but he was left-handed. And, you know, quite a few people do that, but my goodness, not like that.
We'll be right back.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Danny Gatton, Sleepwalk, from the album Unfinished Business, released in 1987 on NRG Records. Steve Vai said, Gatton comes closer than anyone else to being the best guitar player that's ever lived.
Yeah.
On there, right, he's playing like Stink, and then all of a sudden, he just backs his volume off, and he just goes back into that melody. You know, Sleepwalk, very famous song, of course. And I forgot to mention in the previous song, it sounded like a wah-wah pedal. It wasn't a wah-wah pedal at all. All he'd done, he switched to another pickup, and he was using the tone control to go wah-wah-wah. And I'll tell you, he used to do that as well, and that's Rory Gallagher. I've heard him do that, but, you know, I mean, this is just unbelievable. It makes me want to cut my hands off. Honestly, it's just incredible, you know. And the album made him a hit name to drop in musician circles, you know. And it was really the beginning of Danny's long-awaited commercial breakthrough, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know who started NRG?
No. On the notes, League, NRG, Go on.
Norma, his mum.
No.
Yeah, that's her label. That's their label. How cool is that? Go on, Norma. We love you.
We rock. Norma rocks.
I just thought it was great. Well, it was quite interesting, though, that he chose Sleepwalk, because that was like, it was written by the Farino brothers, Santo and Johnny, and it was a massive number one instrumental hit in 1959, and one of the biggest hits of the golden age of rock and roll. Mm. And this song's got a lovely little bit of history, because Sleepwalk was a principal inspiration to Peter Green, who was the founder of Fleetwood Mac, for his 1968 instrumental album Albatross, which became a worldwide hit. And also then Albatross in turn inspired the Beatles song Sun King from Abbey Road.
Well, I didn't know that.
Neither did I. So I just thought, how interesting that Danny chose to include this on the album.
Yeah, it's a great platform for his playing, you know, because in there he's doing like ridiculous arpeggios. He's just you can almost his mind's on fire. You can almost smell him thinking.
But he's talking, isn't he?
Yeah, he's putting in all these different things. And he said it, and in one song, he can introduce so many different styles, because he actually sort of said he had an ambivalent attitude to fame and very much his own man. And he pulled together so many styles, you know. And he said, I can't stand playing a whole night of the same thing. It drives me crazy. I can't stand a set of one thing. And there's something on, we couldn't find a recording of it. I couldn't find a recording of it. But there was something on YouTube I saw some years ago, and it's him playing in a bar, right? And it's like the whole cornucopia of blues and rock and roll guitar and country all in one song. And he plays, it's like a straight up sort of shuffle blues, and it's just mind boggling. Because all of a sudden he's doing like James Burton, then he's on to some sort of Nashville sort of super picking thing, and you know, it's incredible.
He's a genius.
Oh, total genius.
notwithstanding Danny Gatton and Harlem Nocturne from the album Cruising Juices, released in 1993 on the Elektra record label.
My favourite Gatton track, that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, it's that swampy... I'm a sucker for tremolo guitar. And his expression, how he slows it down. And it's just sludgy. And it's beautiful. And his guitar playing is so great. And he can hear that Telecaster. And it's feeding back. Now, a friend of ours, in fact, a guitar builder, not just a friend, he created my Jim Drake custom guitar that I use all the time now. And Jim said he hates that ice pick tone, the Telecaster bridge pickup ice pick tone. Mm-hmm. And that's what Gatton used, really. Now, I'm afraid, Jim, I don't agree with you, because I think it's perfect on this. And the feedback that you can hear, it's whistling, because the pickups on a Telecaster can whistle sometimes because they get a bit microphonic.
Mm.
And you could hear that, but it's obviously pretty loud. But it's just gorgeous. It's swamped in reverb as well. That beautiful Fender reverb tank, the spring reverb, and it's got that compressor on it. Beautiful.
Reminded me a bit of a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, it would. Exactly. Tarantino would have used that in a movie. Yeah.
You guitar players, though, you've all got your own voice, because the guitar that Jim Drake built for you, you're playing. You've risen like a phoenix, and not that you were like ready to rise a phoenix, but your playing's just erupted into this storytelling.
Yeah.
It all depends. I mean, I know you know all about the technicalities and the pickups and what they do and the sounds that you want and all the different amps and everything, but it's in your fingers, isn't it, as well?
But it is. It's totally in your fingers. And this guy, he could play anything, and it would sound exactly like Danny Gatton. Because all you do, because it's funny, and I saw a video of Matt Schofield the other week, who's, he is a friend, actually. We've met him a couple of times and stuff. He's a very, very cool guy. And yeah. I saw a video, and it was talking about how he sets his guitar up. And all he does, he has his guitar, he goes, and he says, right, I'm just going to move the tone knobs until I get the sweet spot. And it takes him about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's the same with any guitar player. And I sort of do the same, really. You just plug in, and you mess around with the tone. And it should only take a few seconds.
Yeah.
And you get yours, and it just sounds like, you.
Yeah. It's anyway, funny that, isn't it? No, I was just thinking also the way that the room changes your sound too, that you just have to kind of feel it, don't you, when you're just setting up, when you're in a different space.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But it's all about low end, it's all about bass.
Well obviously,
anyway.
Yeah, because I'm a bass player. But what I didn't realise about, and literally I'm looking, because I'm always, there's only so much time, and I wanted to keep it really about the feel of Danny's music, and not too documentarian, but enough to get an idea of the man as a person. As well as a musician. His dad was called Daniel W. Gatton Sr. And he was also a rhythm guitarist.
Was he now?
Yeah, and he was known for his unique percussive style, but he left his musical career to raise his family in a more stable profession. So this kind of explains a little bit maybe about Danny's sensibilities, because there was a point in time as well when Atlantic Records had offered Danny a record deal, but he didn't sign despite the financial rewards on offer. And when in an interview with the Baltimore Sun, apparently Danny revealed that he just bought a small house on an acre of land big enough for his 3 vintage cars, 2 dogs and a pet raccoon.
Blimey.
And he was about to become a dad for the first time, and that's all he ever wanted, he told the reporter, to have a house, a kid, and be normal like everyone else.
Mm.
But, there was a bit of an undercurrent of sadness as well, because there were 3 really influential people that he lost in quick succession. There was his dad, and then Dick Hines died, and then Lowell George of Little Feet, he died. And there was like a 3 people who really were close to him died in quick succession. And and apparently Lowell George was going to go solo, and he was talking to Danny about, doing a band with him.
That would have been a hell of a band, holy moly.
And so I think he took that really hard, and I think he was considering maybe just quitting music to concentrate on rebuilding cars for a while. But, he's a human being. It's just, that's... And I've got one more story to tell you, because I get so excited about this, right? You don't know this, right? A young singer called Eva Casti came to him for guitar lessons.
No.
Oh, yeah. And you know, he knew that she was so talented. And what he did is he got us to sing vocals on a couple of songs that we recorded. And that they appear on the album called Untouchable that was posthumously released. How beautiful.
Danny Gatton and Joey DeFrancesco, Relentless, the title track from the eponymous album released on 23rd of June 1994 on Big Mo Records. Great song. And you know, the thing is with that is that he felt as though he was a bit more reined in. He felt a little bit more considered when he was playing there. And
lots of space.
Yeah, lots of space. And I think Joey Di Francesco, who was only 23 at the time, said he was the only person other than Dan Doyle who was able to rein in Danny's penchant for endless retakes.
Yeah.
And it kind of get it, because I think he was a bit more considerate. A great playing, Dami. And I love that Hammond. I mean, we just love Hammond organ, you know, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
That's fantastic. And do you know what? Even now, decades after Danny's no longer with us, there's no shortage of legends ready to champion the late, great Danny Gatton.
Mm.
And you told me about this.
What? The documentary?
Yeah, there's a new documentary just about to be finished.
Well, yeah, they're just trying to raise some money at the moment, and I think it's appropriate that we mention this, you know. At the Humbler, a new documentary being made with the full support of Danny's daughter, Holly, and his widow, Jan. The Humbler's being made by a volunteer-led, non-profit, tax-exempt art organisation, which is great, called Video Culture Inc., who have been making documentaries for PBS, Discovery Channel, National Geographic. And it covers Danny's musical career from the early 60s to 1994 in five chapters. Check out the website. It's thehumblermovie.com. And they still need, as I said, they still need help with funds, so you can contribute via that.
Yeah.
And, you know... The thing that really gets me, though, is this incredible sadness that I get when I listen to him and I read about him, because the music business actually sort of really destroyed him, you know, and he took his own life. And that's why he never wanted Holly to get into it, that's his daughter, because, he just said, the music business just destroyed him, which is awful, isn't it, you know?
I understand that, you know, and I think he was a really, obviously he's a genius and a sensitive chap and a real family man. And I try and think of the positive things here, you know, because this show has been about, and I've learned so much about his music, and he would want, like anyone in life would want you to remember his beauty, the music and all the good things too, you know, and that's what I want to remember Danny Gatton in a beautiful way. I want to remember the positive things, the genius, the guy that speaks guitar in multi languages.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm really looking forward to this movie coming out. So if
I'm
can
so
in any
inspired.
Way, yeah,
and I watched the trailer that's online. I've literally just checked out the website tonight, and there's Albert Lee on the documentary and Holly and all. Musicians, you just have to watch it, and they're just needing some. I think they're going to submit to festivals in a couple of months' time, and they're just sort of clearing music licenses. I've checked out the company; they're all really high caliber professionals. It's a volunteer led thing, and I just think it's fantastic. Go, Danny Gatton.
Yeah, go, and I love this little quote from Les Paul.
Yeah,
and I think he's been interviewed on there, and it says somebody asked him about Danny Gatton, and he said, "You got to watch it. This guy's heavy." Absolutely love. But, you know, just sort of rounding it off, and I've used this quote before, but Hunter S. Thompson, you know, said the music business is a cruel and shallow money trench, a long plastic hallway where thieves and pimps run free and good men die like dogs. There's also the negative side, you know. I've seen that in my career. You see it all the time. And, you know...
We're meeting people like that today. And I just have to keep sort of, you know, it's a good teamwork. We just have to keep picking ourselves up and just looking at the positive things and carrying on, you know, because music is a heartbeat, you know, like Dan is.
And you know, I want this film to come out. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So go, Danny, and we'll see you next week.